Michael J. Epstein, and you're listening to Freeform Radio, 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford.
Good morning, and welcome to the non-automated part of WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Free Forum, commercial-free community-based radio. And you're about to hear 2 hours of community-based programming, socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a... talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. I was just, doing something here on the computer. And anyway, welcome. And the today is Sunday, May 20th, 2018. And I'll be your host today for today's show, Social Alternative Radio. My name is Jeff. And again, you're listening to 91.5 FM. That's also known as WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford. And we got a lot of different names for the station here, Tufts Educational Radio being one of them. Also, we have, we call ourselves Tufts Freeform, as I mentioned earlier. And this show, Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective, been on the air quite a while, over a decade, and we're here to provide alternative news and information, but also to report on real life organized socialist organizing. There is socialism. There is a socialist movement in the United States here and internationally, however underground it may seem at times. And there are thousands of people becoming socialists right now. It's a time of new interest in socialist it's a time of new interest in socialist alternative and socialist groups, sorry. And there is a lot going on, actually, even during this so-called economic boom right now, where a lot of working people are unfortunately not getting anything from that so-called economic boom. Today's an interesting day because a lot of colleges in the area, and where this show emanates from is where Tufts University is, Tufts University's signal station is in Somerville/Medford, Massachusetts, in the United States. And I mention that because we do go international over the wonders of the internet. And by the way, go to WMFO.org to listen live stream and over the internet. Go also to Facebook, Socialist Alternative Radio, if you want to leave us a note and see some of the international aspects of the show. And again, I'm sorry if I'm hesitating a bit here. I'm just trying to, I had something filled in to a log that we keep of what we talk about and play and so on, and it disappeared on me because I dared to hit the wrong button. You probably get that kind of grousing, that kind of complaining from people that are not millennials, that see the downside to all the computer tech, as well as the upside. I'm not a Luddite by any means, but it creates a lot of problems as well as creates a lot of opportunities and interesting things to find out about. Go to socialistalternative.org, for example, if you want more information about the kind of ideas we talk about on the show. And we're also doing this show because we really want you to consider joining the socialist movement, joining Socialist Alternative, becoming a socialist, getting involved in struggles that the socialists generally try to link up different struggles and try to organize in a broad-based, multiracial, multi-gender, working class way, and by working class, the broadest definition, including poor people who can't find work, who are homeless, they're part of the working class. Even though they're trying to sell their labor, no one's buying, and people shouldn't have to sell their labor, which is part of the basics of socialism. Everyone's labor is useful and can be used if we just get together and organize networks and organizations to collectively plan how we're going to use our labor, how much working time really is necessary in a society, and how much leisure time is really necessary in a society, and that sort of thing. To get to that point requires a lot of struggle in a system that exploits labor, exploits the environment to the point where it may be uninhabitable for humans soon. A system, capitalism, that exploits, that commodifies everything, that tries to put a price on everything, make everything saleable, make everything exploitable. And except for the rulers, the owners, they are not the tiny less than 1% that own, that can buy labor on a mass scale and so on, and pollute and exploit nature on a mass scale. They are not subject in many ways to the same precariousness and dangers of the system. Although, if you really step back, they are, actually. That's one of the ironies of capitalism, is that those that are destroying the planet for human life and exploiting the crap out of our daily lives and our work and our power as laborers, they are themselves in certain ways not immune to the alienation inherent in capitalism. Alienation being separated from each other because of the necessity of capitalism to grind us down into poverty, and to keep people separated so they don't organize, to keep people separated from their labor so they don't own their own labor, in the sense of being able to decide what to do with their labor without the coercion of homelessness, starvation, and so on, being forcing us to make choices we don't want to make. And the capitalists, as a whole, and I say, one reason I'm thinking about this is graduation days in the United States, where there's a fairly high percentage under capitalism, not high enough under any decent system, but under capitalism, a fairly high percentage of people in the United States that actually go to college. Very, very low percentage actually finish college, by the way. And that means a 4-year degree. Much tinier percentage finish a master's degree. And then the tiniest, 2%, I've heard, of the population has PhDs. And yet you still have PhDs doing things that have nothing to do with what they studied and doing jobs that are very low paid, because even that 2% is too much for the system that's cutting back on education, that's making education incredibly expensive, too expensive for most people. As I mentioned on the show before, I'm in a complete panic as a parent. I have two young kids, and my wife and I are just don't know how we will ever be able to afford college for our children. It's that expensive now, because we don't want to go deeper into debt. Obviously, we'll probably have to, and we'll die in debt, basically, because of that sort of thing. Unable to retire, most likely, like a lot of Americans, and it's terribly unfair. But I will give a congratulations on behalf of Socialist Alternative. We'll give a congratulations out to the graduates today, especially the working class graduates that had to struggle and that are most likely graduating in debt. And of course, people have a lot of illusions when they graduate, that I did myself too, that things are going to go smoothly and they're going to get the high paying jobs that will enable them to live a decent life without horribly compromising their moral, or let's say some political understanding. Here at Tufts, for example, there was a really good struggle of the still happening of the dining hall workers trying to organize a union here. They got a lot of student support. So I imagine there's a whole layer of students here at Tufts that have that have been politicized somewhat by that struggle. I hope that's the case. I was involved in a couple struggles at Tufts in previous years, where I saw students, even students from wealthy backgrounds, get politicized. That's one thing about education is, you know, the methodology of Marxism of using dialectical materialism to look at how things change and how they're interrelated, and to look at the development of class society historically and how it manifests itself now and so on, has actually done a lot of analysis of students, how even students from wealthy backgrounds, the way that college is organized, the way the university is organized, mostly in service of the ruling class of the capitalists, who cannot just replicate themselves like by cloning or something or by robotics. They actually need a new class, however tiny, of critical thinkers that will be able to take over the running of the system and fulfill professional positions that the capitalists need. Because, you know, capitalists, straight up capitalists, don't really do any work. They hire other people to do the work, exploit other people's brain power and labor power. So the universities are churning out, especially the elite universities are churning out what the capitalists hope will be the new capitalist class or professional class that's going to prop that up. And you look at those people, and you say, or I went to school with a lot of them, and on an individual basis, there's no like, you don't hate. You might think that socialists or Marxists hate individual upper middle class or rich people or something as individuals. And that's just not true. I mean, basically, any decent socialist, any decent Marxist sees that we're talking about a class of ruling class people, of you know, sometimes called bourgeois people. And the capitalist class as a class, not as separate individuals, in terms of how the system functions, in terms of how they function within the system. Doesn't mean there aren't particularly greedy, rotten capitalists. There certainly are. We're going to talk about one of those in a minute here in Massachusetts, the governor, Sir Charles Baker. But there's a lot of, you know, I went to school with some rich, really rich people, and I became friends with a couple of them, and, you know, I don't hold any personal animosity towards them for their wealth. I do get frustrated when they're clearly extolling ideas or putting forward ideas that are just so obviously skewed towards their position in society and their how they are able to live being rich, and they don't see that, or they don't care. In this case, I'd say so they don't see it. I think they're caring people in terms of the people I'm thinking of. But basically, you cannot, so it's not like, you know, I'm condemning any graduates here or anywhere else that are from, you know, the wealthy elite as individuals. But I just wish they understood more what their system represents, what it's doing to the world, unfortunately, and the biases they have inherent in you know, being able to pay for a horribly expensive education and going from there into jobs that they may think are wonderful and they created them or something, but they're actually fulfilling roles already set for them, unfortunately, by capitalist society. In other words, if you can't sell your labor even at that high level, or you can't, inherit capital or have enough money to turn into capital, and then start a process of exploitation of labor and human and natural resources to make a commodity or some or commodities or a service that or a commodified service, let's say, that. That, you know, gives you some internal satisfaction. I don't know what that would be, because you're basically, because of that exploitation, I think it would ruin it. But you know, so if you can't critically examine, like say you graduated pre-med and you're becoming a doctor. I mean, that's a honorable thing to explore until you get into how terribly ridiculously expensive medical education is here in the United States. To get into the fact that hospitals are not being run for profit mostly, and making and the concentration of capital that Marx talks about is happening again in the field of hospitals and medicine. So you have, on one hand, you have a lot of doctors sort of becoming proletarianized at one end of the spectrum, where they're finding it hard to set up their little doctor company, you know, their little private doctor company somewhere, like used to happen in, say, the 50s and 60s, 70s. And they're forced to work for big health conglomerates that treat them more and more like workers, which is, to a doctor, most doctors with their biases, class biases, and so on, a horrible thing. Or working for a hospital where the bottom line is just profit making. As a result, there are a certain layer of doctors who organize themselves into unions or support. Like, there's a group I really like called Physicians for National Healthcare. I think that's the title of it. Physicians for National Health Policy, something like that. PNHPRC. I've looked them up on the internet in past years a lot. I haven't lately. And there's other groups like that too. Medical professionals actually can think critically about what's going on. Hopefully some of them socialists. I do know some doctors who are socialists. And then join the fight for, let's say, improved Medicare for all, a recent slogan we're using in Socialist Alternative, to try to put forward the idea of universal health care in a way that people can understand. I've always had a problem personally with the slogan single payer health care, because what does that mean, really? It's like a confusing slogan. I still would have trouble completely defining it to you. I could give you a quick definition. It means that you basically everyone pays into one massive insurance pool, and then everyone gets insured from that. But why make it an insurance pool is the question. Why can't it just be everyone pays into a government agency, like in Britain, for a national health service? Why is there still this thing called health insurance around? That's an anachronism. We should be paying, our taxes should go, and of course the big corporations, the super rich, should pay the vast majority of these taxes, not us, because we're already taxed to death, working people. And that should go directly to healthcare costs for everybody. And one way to get people to wrap their heads around that a little more is improved Medicare for all, although Medicare has a lot of problems, and as far as I understand, it doesn't include dental or vision, which any decent health plan needs to include, and also it has still sort of an insurance scheme, although run by the government. Again, why have this sort of, why mimic insurance, why mimic private insurance when you just have a directly run national health service, socialized medicine? Anyway, today's show, Social Alternative Radio, again, if you just turned in, and it is Sunday, May 20th, 2018. And your host today is myself, Jeff. And we're going to be talking about a little more about graduation day. A lot of colleges graduating around the Boston area, including right here at Tufts University. And something that a nice graduation that I and other members of Social Alternative went to yesterday and stood outside and tried to raise awareness about the commencement speaker, Sir Charles Baker, the current governor of Massachusetts, and the horrible, horrible policies he's doing to even hurt the place that he was speaking at, Worcester State University, a public college, and 21 and the cuts that have happened in education, largely due to Baker and previous governors, both Republican and Democratic, and a Democratic legislature that runs the show here in the state of Massachusetts. There's been a, let me try to find the figure here, a 31% cut in spending to public universities here in Massachusetts, colleges and universities, 31% per student since 2001. And they are always messing with the underfunding or level funding budgets for University of Massachusetts and so on. And it's just really, really pathetic that private schools now are so horribly expensive that college is becoming more and more elite in this country, despite what I said earlier about the United States having a lot of people starting college Most of them drop out. You still have college, a 4-year college degree success rate, let's say graduation rates, still hover around 25%, which they have for a very long time. It's getting, I would argue it's probably getting worse than that now because of the cost. And yet at the same time, there's incredible pressure to get some sort of degree to say what used to be, jobs used to be available with only a high school degree are now only available with a college degree. And yet college is being made more and more unaffordable for working class people. And again, by working class, we're using a broad definition of anyone that has to sell their labor to survive, including those that aren't able to because they're not, their labor's not being exploited. It's not being bought by the capitalists. That would be poor, so-called poor people, homeless people, and so on. So in the broadest definition, working class people are, I think, less, over time, are going to be starting school less, starting college less, and even less finishing than now, which is a very telling statistic about how expensive college is. And, you know, there's this push now also from some quarters of like, well, you don't really need a degree, go to vocational school, you know. And I kind of agree with that in some ways, but I question the motives of the people saying it. They're saying it to make a profit off of students. They're saying it in a way that is being targeting working class students, and there are many working class students that will do just fine in a non-vocational setting. It should be a choice, obviously, but a choice based on free education for all, basically. And that's our demand in Socialist Alternative, free education, free public education for all, K through university. And that would be a big step towards eventual free education for everyone, where in future struggles, going beyond just the public universities and taking into public ownership the private universities, which are, you know, taking up tons of public money and tons of money from people and taking up a lot of land and resources that should definitely be publicly owned. I, for example, work at Harvard University, an institution never cried out more for public ownership than Harvard University, because they've got more, the owners of Harvard, it's a corporate board that owns it. They have more, and you know, originally got their money from the slave trade and all that, and wiping out Native Americans, stealing land, all that stuff that America is founded on. And Harvard has amassed such enormous wealth in terms of real estate and assets and things like art museums and libraries and so on, and they periodically cull that stuff to sell it off or whatever. But they add on more. They bought up an entire neighborhood practically in Alston, Massachusetts, and they're putting these huge buildings, I think they have in mind for engineering and bioscience and stuff like that. And this is way too much resources. Even just the library system, which I work in, which they're destroying now. They're really wrecking the library system at Harvard in the sense of they just think it's going to be so much cheaper when everything's digitalized. And there's the bias when everything is digitalized, which is not happening at the rate you would think. And even if it is, it still doesn't make anything more accessible than a non-digital format. So they're placing everything, they're hedging all their bets on digitalization, making profits off of that. And meanwhile, undermining the upkeep and addition to the non-digital formats, the books and so on. And the space needed. They've closed down libraries and so on, and they're encouraging the people that buy the books for the university to always look for the electronic version first and that sort of thing. If we just could bring those libraries under public ownership that Harvard owns, sustain the collections of all sorts of material, not ignore digitalization, but not use it to cut costs, supposedly, at least costs for them, costs for the user go up, will go up. There's already paywalls and things, stopping a lot of research, and that will get worse and worse. Eventually public ownership of these private universities, including Harvard, that is the goal of socialists. And using those, imagine like having the library system at Harvard open 24 hours a day for whoever wanted to go in there and do research, including, you know, computers and digital research and so on. Imagine a society where actually libraries were open longer than bars. You know, imagine a society where people, where all these resources didn't lie idle. I mean, the graduates are leaving now. It's only May, right? You got June, July, August, and, you know, there's three months out of the year, plus the holidays, like around Christmas, sometimes a month of a holiday, where either there might be some little program going on, like over the summer, but even if there is, the vast majority of assets and resources at a big university, especially private universities, lay idle. It's very, very inefficient, extremely inefficient. Now, for the capitalists that run the universities, and they do run them, they're so-called nonprofit, but they really are run for profit. Big salaries for the administrators, big endowments, which is just basically capital sitting there, being used from time to time. Not enough, by the way. So, amassing capital, doling out really high salaries, putting forward the propaganda and value system of the capitalist class that owns these private colleges and so on, and by extension owns the public universities in the sense of owning the government, controlling the government, and then the government forcing its dictates on the public universities, destroying, getting rid of radical professors, destroying programs that they don't consider relevant anymore. Labor studies programs have been being shut down around the country, for example. Many, many other examples like that of all sorts of different, anything, you know, progressive, anything even with the humanities. And at a certain point, the humanities themselves become a suspect. They are already in a capitalist system. I mean, why teach critical thinking when what we really need is people to run the vast computer networks and do the IT thing and, you know, and just keep all those people in line. So you need the bosses, you need the, you know, researchers at a higher level, although a lot of researchers will just be grunts, you know, they'll just be exploited, even if they get higher pay for now. Capitalism will find a way to, you know, flatten out wages in any skilled labor. Today's skilled labor is tomorrow's unskilled labor. That's been the unfortunate rule of capitalist commodification of labor. That, you know, you could spend a long time, like there's a woman in Socialist Alternative member who talked about her summer job being working in this place that made like these wooden cuckoo clocks and little clock things, and all the people she works with, so it's like this little like niche, tiny little production thing of a few workers doing woodwork for silly little things. And basically, these workers used to make furniture. They used to be highly skilled furniture makers. And then all that work went over to China, cheaper labor to exploit in China. Who knows where it is now? Maybe it's in Vietnam or Indonesia or something. Capitalism was always chasing the cheap labor, or setting up the conditions for the cheap labor, and then moving production there. And so, the system chews up regularly skilled labor and unskills it, de-skills it. It happened where I work, when I first started, what I did was considered somewhat skill-oriented in terms of languages and knowing languages and stuff like that. And now I might as well be working in the factory I worked in when I was 17 years old, in terms of, except for the, without the danger and intense heat, I'm working in, I'm doing rote work. I'm doing work that is not, except for learning the latest computer systems they want to bring in. once you learn those, the work becomes very repetitive and very production-based. And it's again, de-skilling, which happens all the time under capitalism. But anyway, a little more about graduation day this weekend. Yesterday was Worcester State's graduation. That's Worcester State University here in Massachusetts. Worcester, W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R, pronounced Worcester or Worcester, and is a city in central Massachusetts. Second largest city in New England, actually. A lot of people don't know that. A city where Some people would argue it's not much of a city. It's really a place where people kind of just live for slightly cheaper rents than in other, like in the Boston area, greater Boston area. So you go out to Worcester, 45 minutes to an hour on the Pike, which is the Massachusetts Turnpike, a big road. Or in other areas around Worcester, Worcester is just like a big spot of living or something. I disagree with that. I think it has its history and its reasons for being where it is geographically, in terms of all sorts of natural resources out there, in terms of its manufacturing base that it used to have, and still has a little bit of, actually more than a lot of cities in New England, more of a manufacturing base, a lot of cities in New England. So here you have the second largest city in New England, Worcester. Very poor city, though, unfortunately, compared to, in terms of living standards for working people, compared to some other cities in Massachusetts. And it's a struggle, you know, it's a struggle. You have the Democrats control the city government, Democrats control the state government, and they are doing the old austerity cuts thing, even during an economic boom. So in Worcester, for example, the main mode of transport, public transport, is the bus system, the Worcester Regional Transit Authority. That's being cut yet again after other cuts that's had recent history, which will result in more layoffs and cuts to service. So it's kind of a downward spiral. You had a Democrat named Rosen say, well, you know, things are getting worse, so maybe we should privatize some of the bus routes. Which is the trick of privatization is always defund, underfund, cut, make worse, and then say, this is because it's a public thing, you know, and if we just privatize it, everything will be fine. And of course, when the privatization hits, everything is less than fine, it's horrible, and even disappears. I just read of an example of a big railroad in London, in England, where they've recently, in recent years, privatized, for no reason except to make profits for the capitalists, privatized the rail system that used to be publicly owned for a long time. And the one of the biggest rail systems in how they split it up to privatize it has just gone bankrupt, and it's going to be renationalized. But, you know, with the conservatives in power or the right-wing labor that was in power before, under Blair and so on, that's the renationalization is sort of akin to sort of like the Obama administration bailing out the big corporations like General Motors that failed during the Great Recession of 2007, 2008, and so on, where these big bailouts happened in the United States. In effect, they could have been moments of public ownership of these big corporations, and instead they were turned into just big corporate welfare, moments where they were bailed out and then put back into private ownership, even just in terms of the money. And they were never under true any kind of public control, really, although the government for a short time could have made demands, could have done things, and instead just basically handed a lot of money and waited for the smoke to clear and then gave it back to the capitalists who had bankrupted them in the first place. And you have, so that's analogous to a lot of privatization schemes, including the one I just described in Britain, where it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. They get another massive handout from the state, which they control politically for the most part, to then restart the whole thing again. It's like right now, the capitalist parties that at certain points in history were forced to consider public ownership or nationalization, for example, Amtrak or whatever. Now their default position, both Republican and Democrat, of course, is to basically just assume that private ownership is the way to go, that private, non-state, non-governmental, running of things is somehow better. And when the exact opposite is true, in just about every case you can think of, especially massive systems, like healthcare systems, like transportation systems, like education systems. And that's going to get us a good segue into this, what happened yesterday at Worcester State University during graduation. Somebody chose there, I guess it was the administration, chose Sir Governor Baker, Sir Charles Baker, Charles Baker, Charles the Baker, not. He doesn't really do anything good like a baker might do. He is a straight-up capitalist. He was a CEO at Harvard Pilgrim Health Insurance, a private health company, and he cut workers, he cut jobs, he raised premiums. I pay money to that company to get health insurance, and it's horribly expensive. And this is, he earned $1.5 million plus in annual bonuses. He earned $1.5 million annually plus bonuses. So this is Baker. Then before that, he had some position running the Big Dig, which is a shorthand term in Boston for a big infrastructure project they had in the 90s. And it was infamous for going over cost and giving a lot of money to private contractors. And Baker oversaw all that. And it was very unpopular, but in a lot of ways. But when everything, you know, Baker just kept his head down, did his wrecking of, further wrecking of Harvard Community Healthcare, Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, and then reemerged, ran for governor, and won. A lot of people would say he won because the Democrat they put up was Martha Coakley, I guess was her name, was just so, like, mainstream corporate, you know, Democrat. I think that really, no matter who the Democrats had put up, there was a situation where the situation was. You know, the old ping pong game, the old duopoly, the old lesser evilism that American politics stays stuck in an infantile way, where, you know, people got sick of Deval Patrick and his policies of austerity and so on. He was a Democratic governor. And so they just voted for a Republican, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, and this is a Republican who made some populist noises, Baker. But who, when, you know, if you ask them a straight up question, like the media loves him, right? Corporate media loves Baker because it's the corporate media. So they say things, they call him Charlie and they toss him softballs all the time. But I, on the other hand, and some members of Social Alternative confronted him directly in his first term of running for first time of running for office. He ran in West Roxbury and he ran to, he was at West Roxbury because that's a big part of, it's a neighborhood in Boston with a lot of voters. And he did this thing where we just asked him, hey, what's your position on the $15 minimum wage, which was already starting to get off the ground then. We had achieved it in Seattle, or we're about to, or in through Shama Sawan and Socialist Alternative. And he goes, I think the minimum wage is fine where it is, you know. So, you know, you go down the list of things. Then comes a couple of years ago, in 2016, came the charter school raised the cap on charter schools. A charter school, if you're not from the U.S., basically is a private company coming in and getting public money, you know, working people's tax money to run a school. And to be without any accountability from the public. Like, there's no, if you have a school committee, it doesn't control, if you have an elected school committee, it doesn't control the charter schools. They're also very anti-union, so it's a way of moving resources away from the public schools, and in so doing, not only hurting the public schools in terms of their basic resources, but hurting them in terms of the unionization of teachers and other staff. moving to a non-union environment, an environment without accountability to the public, and a sort of corporate relationship established with the school administration and maybe the city council in a given city, sort of like a subcontracting thing in a way. Yeah, charter school, you come in, we'll give you all this money, and you go do what you want, you know. And it's just a way of privatizing education because it's basically a private company getting all this tax money. It's even in some ways worse than privatization because they're getting the money, most of their money or all their money from taxes. But it's a way to privatize. And at some point, of course, you'll see proliferation of schools, if it's not stopped, that were charter schools getting their money from taxation. The taxation, the school resources, public resources are so low they don't want to dip from that anymore. They've already siphoned off all they could, made it almost nothing, and they just go straight up private, and everyone's paying fees to go to these private schools that used to be charter schools. And they probably already have fees as well, by the way, within the charter school systems. So charter schools are a thing that both Republicans and Democrats on a national and local level just love, a lot of them. And Baker is one of them, loves the charter school stuff. In fact, when the charter school stuff was happening here in 2016, you should have listened to the corporate media. Every Democrat, every liberal Democrat, some of them wouldn't take a stand, and they wouldn't say, well, I think this is great, but they would say, I think it's going to pass. You know, they would find ways to kind of promote it without putting themselves in a situation of saying, yes, they like it. Then others were just more forthright and said, oh, I think it's great. Yeah, let's just do it. What's the harm? Blah, blah, blah. Raise the cap on charter schools. And it becomes a public thing. And the teachers' unions and others start to organize against it. Socialist Alternative helped with that organizing to a certain extent in Worcester and Boston. We didn't lead it or anything. We're not trying to exaggerate our role, but we were clearly against raising the cap on charter schools, and we did a lot of organizing, relatively speaking, in certain areas around it. And it was called the No on Two campaign to defend public schools, and it passed by an enormous margin. The no votes were like 65-66%. Huge margin. It was one of these times where all the corporate media propaganda was just so disconnected from the reality of people fighting for decent public schools that people just didn't listen to it at a certain point. You can say whatever you want about charter schools. You can hit me with more countless propaganda. And even if I'm not politically aware of what that stuff is, there's something wrong with my tax money going to a private school. And who are these charter school people? They can take whoever they want. They don't have to take all the students in an area. So they're not going to take the students with learning disabilities or physical disabilities or whatever. That's not fair. They're going to take, who are in these charter schools? My kid's not a charter school, you know? How do you get into them? Oh, it's this thing you have to, sort of a lottery system, blah, blah, blah. They choose who they want, not like public school. It has to try to educate everybody. And they're sucking up my tax dollars for a private profit. So maybe I caught on to some of that, maybe all of it, maybe just a piece of it. I don't like it. No. Now, Baker, the commencement speaker at Worcester State University, loves charter schools and put that stuff forward yesterday. And yet, because of the corporate media propagandizing for Baker, loving his austerity measures, loving when he laid workers off at Harvard Pilgrim and so on, they don't define the issues clearly at all. They just do a popular, you know, sort of right-wing populist thing with Baker, you know, and a lot of people fall for it, unfortunately. But we're there yesterday passing out leaflets that say, fight the cuts, defend and extend our public services. As Socialist Alternative, congratulations, graduates. But we say to the commencement speaker, Baker, Governor Baker, no more cuts. Congratulations, Worcester State University graduating class 2018. Today, Governor Baker will talk to you about this was yesterday. We'll talk to you about the shining opportunities for tomorrow after he has deliberately underfunded your education, cut your faculty's living standards, denied staff living wages, and slashed school services. Don't let Baker take credit for your success. Education, quality, education, quality public services, and a living wage are rights for all. And then it goes into this a leaf that we passed out. I helped pass it out. Governor Baker has worked in concert with a Democratic-controlled legislature to privatize public education through the expansion of charter schools, underfunded and then privatized the T, which is the regional subway and bus system in the greater Boston area, delayed legislation for a $50 minimum wage for years, inadequately responded to Boston's housing crisis, preferring instead to approve increased transit fares for workers who have already been pushed outside the city by gentrification. It should come as no surprise for a politician coming from a wealthy, well-established conservative family. This is Baker again, Charles Baker, which served under Nixon and Reagan, that these should be the kind of policies that Baker viciously pursues. So anyway, I won't read the whole thing, but give you an example again. I mentioned this on the show a couple weeks ago. In Worcester, Baker and the state Democrats are refusing to find the only $1 million the Worcester Regional Transit Authority needs to prevent devastating bus route cuts and bus fare increases. And all the while, Baker and the legislature control a $1.4 billion rainy day fund, a state fund, designated just for such things. Plus the just general huge Massachusetts budget in the billions. I don't have the exact figure in front of me. And also, he comes and speaks at a public university when there are these huge teacher strikes happening all over the country, and they've cut 31%, Baker and the Democrats have cut 31% for students since 2001. Some of that was before Baker got in, but it's the same trend. So anyway, I'm glad we were there. We got a pretty good response, I'd say 40% positive, 30 or 40% kind of neutral. It's not a big, vibrant activist culture in Worcester. So people kind of see, like a lot of cities, they kind of see people doing activism and they're not quite sure what to make of it, really. But then there was about a 1% that was hostile, and they were funny. They were really funny. One guy took the leaflet and slammed it on the ground. It's hard to slam a leaflet on the ground. He used his, like, his palm, you know. He goes, "This is a graduation." Well, okay, dude. I've been to so many graduations, including my own, that had protests. At Harvard, there's almost every year there's some sort of protest happening. At, you name it. At graduations, because of the capitalist and capitalist politicians they get, the universities like to get for commencement speakers, there's inevitably going to be some sort of protest. This is a good thing, usually. You know, Baker has to get called out. Corporate media's not doing it. Baker, not that they would anyway, but Baker has to get called out on these policies. There's an election coming up. I'm not saying there's anyone to vote for besides, you know, that's any going to be any fundamentally better than Baker. We'll see. But for now, it is they're basically ceding the election to Baker, and we believe in telling the truth basically about what Baker's doing, Sir Charles Baker is doing, to the people of Massachusetts and the people of Worcester, for example, and it's hurting them really badly. Anyway, there's a new issue of Worcester Organizer, a little subset of all the publications that come out of Socialist Alternative nationally. The Socialist Alternative newspaper comes out monthly, and so I go to socialistalternative.org for more information on how to subscribe, by the way. And the Worcester Organizer is this little publication that we kind of a Xerox thing we put out for free in the Worcester area from Worcester Socialist Alternative. And we have a new issue. We're passing them out along with our leaflet yesterday. And there's some good stuff in it. And if you want a copy, various ways to get one, you can go to, again, socialistalternative.org nationally and ask to get in touch with Worcester. You can Facebook / Worcester Socialist Alternative. You can Twitter at Worse, WORCSA. You can write to us at WORCESTER, Worcester, WORCESTERSA @gmail.com. Or call us in Worcester Social Alternative at 508-864-5006. That's 508-864-5006. 864-5006 for Worcester Socialist Alternative. So new issue of Worcester Organizer. Some of the articles, just real quick. A speech that a member of Worcester Social Alternative gave at the May 1st rally of the Worcester Community Labor Coalition. There was a May Day rally in Worcester. It was pretty good. There's private healthcare concerns I told you about. UMass Memorial Medical Center. They're closing down a health clinic that cost very little to operate, but served a large population of people in a poor part of Worcester, Plumley Village, it's called. Closing that down, and there's a fight against that, and we're part of that. Then there's an article on wage theft and the Carpenters Union in Worcester fighting against wage theft somewhat successfully. And then there's an article about the $15 minimum wage, which is a statewide referendum that right now, I think it's called Raise Up Massachusetts. They're kind of focusing on a electoral strategy, and we think that's a failure with the electoral strategy in terms of lobbying Democrats in Massachusetts because they control the legislature. We think that's kind of a failure. They should instead be doing mass protests and getting signatures, as they are. They are getting signatures for the most likely, that you want it to go through referendum process. Because, by the way, even if you convince the Democrats to do a legislative process, they'll mess with the bill. They'll water it down horribly. And also this article on $50 minimum wage in Worcester Organizer goes into a Worcester law that encourages companies to pay $50 an hour and how that hasn't really been successful in some cases, and a article about the attack on the bus system, the regional transit system in Worcester and also other parts of Massachusetts. And it's called Public Transit Under Attack is the article. So these are some things that are, local to Worcester, but part and parcel of the class struggle in the United States right now, which is, cut even in the moments of supposed prosperity in terms of the economic upswing they talk about right now. Cut, cut, cut. There's no money for anything. How dare you try to raise taxes? And we're going to get into that in a second here because we just had a pretty much of a victory. I think a partial victory, but a victory worth itself and worth talking about. And that is in Seattle, where there is a member of Social Alternative who has been elected twice to Seattle City Council. That's Shama Sawant, KSHAMASAWANT, as an open socialist, open member of Social Alternative. And we helped lead the successful $50 minimum wage campaign back in 2014, I think it was, and that successfully won the first $50 minimum wage law in major city in the United States. Since then, there has been other $15 an hour wage laws passed. And since then, the $50 minimum wage law has unfortunately had some incremental steps attached to it by the Democrats before it fully passed, and that's been coming in increments to tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of workers in Seattle, which is really good, and that's finally kicking in for a lot of people. And it did start to kick in for some right in the beginning, so it's been seen as a very positive thing in Seattle and among the working people. And so we've had other movements we've done quite successfully because the way that Social Alternative organizes is not just, oh, wow, so there's a socialist elected now and a member of our organization, right, into city council. And so there, all we have to do now is just sort of the backroom schmoozing and the lobbying and all that. No, we don't go that way. We use every opportunity we can to use electoral politics as an organizing platform. So every time an issue comes up, we try to organize as much mass support for it as possible through building coalitions with other groups, through organizing protests, oftentimes right at City Hall. There was an early effort to, once they caught on to our method, the Democrats tried to get the courts to outlaw having mass meetings, mass protests in city council, even though there's this big chamber, big room with just for that purpose, was built for that purpose, to have the public be able to come in hundreds of people at least, and push the city hall. They wanted to shut that down, at least for use of organizing for people to make their opinion known to city council. It's, of course, extremely ridiculously undemocratic and so on, even in the limited confines of U.S. democracy. That was obviously a weird thing to do, and a judge kind of caught on to that and said, are you serious, Democrats in Seattle? You're really going to go through with this? You're going to look like crap. And they dropped it, and that was the last we heard of that. So we're still using a sort of mass mobilization tactic to try to get things done, and it's been successful in, for example, getting $50 minimum wage law passed, successful in getting a law, some basic tenants' rights laws passed against a big slumlord named Carl Hoagland and other slumlords. Was able to get money for public housing, or for housing, I'm not sure if it was build low income or for public housing, through stopping a new police headquarters being built a couple of years ago. It would have been a big cash cow for private developers and so on, but the existing police headquarters is good enough. And through Shama's lead, through Social Alternative helping, that was defeated, and money was gained instead for housing. And now, and there's been other struggles we've won, some we haven't won, some that haven't got beyond the initial phases of organizing. But here's one that popped up fairly quick and got settled fairly quick for now. And it's called, it's a taxation proposal, progressive taxation proposal. So as we've talked about on the show before, many times, you have this thing in the United States, and it should be pretty obvious and pretty clear how dumb it is, but you have this thing in the United States where if you say the word taxes, raise taxes, or the phrase raise taxes, the corporate media has people trained, a lot of people, to immediately like start deposing that, because raising taxes can never just mean raise taxes on the super rich or the big corporations. –